Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to the Atlanta Legal Experts radio show. I am your host, Emily Rowell, with attorneyofficespace.com. We also have Rich Casanova, the co-host today with Buckhead Business Radio X, and our producer.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm not an attorney, so just make that clear right up front, yeah.
Neither am I. And I'm looking forward to today's show. Today we have the Atlanta Office of Fisher & Phillips and some representatives of the Atlanta Bar Association. We have Jim Walters here, the senior partner in the Atlanta Office of Fisher & Phillips. Good morning.
Good morning.
We have Lori Maring of counsel in the Atlanta Office of Fisher & Phillips.
Good morning.
And we have Wade Watson, the immediate past president of the Atlanta Bar Association. Good morning.
Good morning.
We have Terry Beck, the executive director of the Atlanta Bar Association. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
And Jackie Saylor, president of the Atlanta Bar. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
And I just wanted to start off today. We'll be talking about the recent U.S. Supreme Court rulings that have caused a lot of controversy. And stay tuned later in the show. We'll be hearing from Atlanta's 6,500 member Atlanta Bar Association. So this is going to be an exciting show.
I agree. Yeah, I concur. I think is that a legal term? Yeah. Wade's nodding. Yeah, rolling his eyes. Whatever. Yeah, he's definitely not an attorney yet.
Jim Walters, we're going to give your bio and Lori as well, starting with Fisher & Phillips this morning. Jim Walters is a senior partner in the Atlanta Office of Fisher & Phillips, LLP, one of the nation's leading labor and employment firms representing employers. His practice has a long emphasis on representing employers under the two principal federal labor laws, the National Labor Relations Act and the Railway Labor Act. In addition to representing employers in various industries in both collective bargaining and arbitration matters, Jim devotes a substantial amount of his time to defending companies charged with unfair labor practices or similar claims in cases before the NLRB, the NNB, and numerous federal courts. Jim also has represented employers in cases arising under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, as amended, Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972, the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Fair Labor Standards Act, and the Family and Medical Leave Act. He has entered appearances in dozens of U.S. district courts and is admitted in all U.S. courts of appeals and the Supreme Court of the United States. And you can hear or see the rest of his bio on AtlantaLegalExperts.com. And let me go ahead and read Lori Maring's bio so that we can see who's talking with us today from Fisher & Phillips. She is of counsel in Atlanta Office of Fisher & Phillips, where she serves on its Employee Benefits Practice Group. Lori started her legal career at King & Spalding in Atlanta and has more than 20 years of experience as an employee benefits lawyer. Prior to joining Fisher & Phillips, she most recently practiced at McKenna, Long & Aldridge, where she counseled employers, trade associations, and fiduciary committees on a wide variety of issues relating to the design, operation, and compliance of qualified and non-qualified retirement plans, multiple employer welfare arrangements, employer-sponsored life, health, and other welfare benefit plans, wellness programs, and executive compensation. A significant part of her practice focuses on helping employers navigate the Affordable Care Act. Lori graduated cum laude from the University of South Carolina School of Law. She's a member of the Georgia State Bar Association's Employee Benefits Section, Women in Pensions, and Worldwide Employee Benefits Network. Well, it sounds like you guys are definitely entitled to be here on the show today of Atlanta Legal Experts.
Well, happy to be here. Thank
Good.
You.
Yes.
Yes.
Let me start off with a couple questions with Jim. Since Georgia also has thousands of Medicaid-sponsored home care providers, is this type of case likely to arise here?
If you're talking about Harris versus Quinn, the answer is, in all probability, never. The state of Georgia has not befriended organized labor with respect to public sector employees. Harris versus Quinn eventually involved a half-breed species of employees. They were deemed to be part private and part public, and therefore not under the Illinois Public Employee Relations Act, which is what the Supreme Court ultimately ruled. But the answer is no. That's not a probability at all in Georgia.
And I apologize. I had the wrong question to start, but I'm going to start over again, if that's okay. What is the basis for you, Lori, for the court's decision that a for-profit corporation can choose not to comply with the ACA's requirement to provide contraception to female employees?
Well, under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, a person cannot be compelled to do something in violation of their religious beliefs unless there is a compelling government interest and the government basically doesn't, it's the least restrictive means for providing that or fulfilling that interest. In the Hobby Lobby case, the plaintiffs were objecting to the requirement in the Affordable Care Act that a group health plan cover all FDA-approved contraceptions. And four of those, in the view of the plaintiffs, were basically abortion-type drugs and violated their religious beliefs against abortion. So one of the biggest issues for the court was whether the Religious Freedom Restoration Act applied to a for-profit corporation.
Okay.
And under the law, it basically, the law applies to any person, and the court held that, a person includes, for-profit as well as not-for-profit corporations. I think that was, not necessarily very controversial decision. I think ultimately the controversy has just come over the fact that it was dealing with the contraceptions and that the decision enabled Hobby Lobby and the other plaintiffs and any other not-for-profit to avoid that obligation.
Gotcha. So who got it right, in your opinion? The majority or dissent?
Well, that's yes. I think both of them, I think, had excellent points.
Sure.
Certainly, I know that's a legal answer, isn't it? There's a lawyer for
it's a
you.
Loaded question, whatever. Yeah.
Talking on both sides. Yes. I think in terms of the requirements of the act, certainly, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act does. I agreed with the majority that it would apply to a corporation or a for-profit corporation. I think the dissent had a great point, though, that if the least restrictive means is that the government can pick up the tab, which is in effect what will happen for these employees who, that won't be getting their coverage under the plan.
Correct.
That there will always. That's always going to be an issue, and it could certainly lead to other lawsuits down the road. We don't know what the fallout's going to be, but we can certainly expect there will be many more challenges.
Now, I heard also that Hobby Lobby, or they were all saying as a result that, they're not offering any types of contraception, which is, I don't believe is true. Can you clarify?
Well, Hobby Lobby only objected to four of the contraceptive or contraceptions approved by FDA. There are other cases, or at least one other case I know, that the plaintiff is objecting to providing any type of contraception. So that was remanded by the Supreme Court back to the appellate level for additional review after its decision in Hobby Lobby. So I think we'll probably see some plans and companies that don't want to cover any, and that may be approved.
I see. What happens to the female employees of Hobby Lobby and other corporations who object to providing contraception on religious grounds?
Well, the Supreme Court basically put the issue back to the government and said, you can find a way to work around these individuals getting their contraception in the same way that you've done for religiously affiliated employers. There's currently an accommodation out there that would allow an insurer to provide those contraceptions directly to the employees, and it's basically paid for by the government through a tax credit back to the insurer. So what will happen is, and the IRS has announced that it will find a way to make sure that these individuals do get their contraceptions provided at no cost.
Okay.
We don't know what that's going to look like yet, but
sure. Okay. So
but they will not be, they won't be left without a way to get that for
free. Sure. Do you expect that we will see additional legal challenges to the ACA under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, like we talked about a little bit before?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we will. There's certainly vaccinations is one of the objectionable required coverage, required benefits that I think we'll see an objection to. there was a Satan group or satanic group yesterday that came out with another objection, not necessarily under Affordable Care Act, but I think it's going to maybe spark lawsuits under many different kinds of acts.
Jim, can you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, however well-intended, it's kind of opened a Pandora's box.
Yeah. Sure.
And anytime you inject the First Amendment, which is pretty powerful, into legislation or desired legislative results, you can have some unintended consequences.
Right.
I think there'll be a lot of lawsuits, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I think nobody's bothered to estimate the number of privately held corporations that may have or suddenly develop religious convictions that were heretofore unheard of.
Right. Well, and like the same-sex spouse coverage requirements, that's been a recent push and a little mm-hmm. bit controversial, so I think we might see some challenges in that area too.
Which brings me to the next question. If not in Georgia, any other states may be likely to see this kind of litigation?
Yes. I mean, this is...
You're talking about Harris versus Quinn?
Yes.
Yes. There we go.
We're switching back from private sector to public sector.
I was on the edge of my seat for this one. Yeah, here we go.
Yes, there are at least four teed up, all by the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation, which brought the action in Illinois and Harris versus Quinn. I'm advised that three of those will go forward. One, I believe it's Massachusetts. They're expecting capitulation by the state, because virtually every state has one of these home care providers that are funded by Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And so the potential for a revenue stream for some union as a scheme, which is basically what the Supreme Court found in Harris versus Quinn.
Can you dive a little bit deeper in Harris versus Quinn and just explain that case for us?
Medicaid provides home health and mm-hmm. has for years and years. And virtually all states have set up agencies to distribute and kind of regulate the home health care. Mm-hmm. And I think Illinois was typical, although a little larger because it is the fifth most populous state. But I think at the time that the lawsuit was decided, there were roughly 12,000 of these personal assistants. And the idea of the legislative and regulatory system is good. It provides personal assistance on a kind of full-time basis that are picked by and managed by the customers or clients, the patients who are getting Medicaid, to live in the home and assist them in, you know, kind of all manners and functions of daily life. And the money comes from Medicaid to Health and Human Services through these state agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And just as a matter of background, because I think it's kind of important, Illinois does have public sector bargaining, as a lot of states do. And in the 1980s, the Service Employees Union, which was basically the protagonist in this particular case, tried to organize these same people. And the Illinois State Commission said, no, they're not an appropriate bargaining union because they've got two masters. They've got a little bit of say-so to the state, but mostly to their private customers. So they're kind of dual-purpose employees.
Mm-hmm.
And the petition to represent them was dismissed. And then... actually, the case should be called Harris versus Blagojevich because back in 2003, this was his idea. He initially, by executive order, declared these people to be employees. And then that was followed up with some legislative action in Springfield, and they amended their Public Relations or Public Employee Relations Act to include this job category as state employees. And that eventually prompted the lawsuit, which was dismissed in the district court in Chicago, and the dismissal was upheld by the Seventh Circuit. And the Supreme Court reversed basically on First Amendment grounds. But yes, I'm advised that there will be cookie-cutter actions like this in at least three other states, Minnesota, New Jersey, California, which will be, include a larger group of employees, obviously.
Gotcha.
And the dues function is by itself is pretty significant. Somewhere in the record, it was pointed out that the service employees were picking up about $3.6 to $3.7 million a year in dues just out of the Illinois personal assistance. So there's some money at stake.
So how did the case end up in federal court? If you could explain that a little bit more.
The National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation brought a case to declare that compulsory agency shop obligations to these personal assistants like that were unconstitutional, and that's what
that's what they ended up getting.
It doesn't mean that people are that personal assistants are going to be bailing out and not paying the agency fee. It just means if they have an objection, they can.
Gotcha. Rich, did you have any questions?
I'm just sending out some tweet messages. We're getting a lot of interesting feedback online right now. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Jim. Why would the Service Employees International Union or any other labor organization even be interested in representing such a dispersed group as this, where the employees were placed in private homes and not working at a central location such as a hospital?
In a cynical nutshell, it's ease of dues collection. You know, if they have a contract that covers everybody and provides for a revenue stream, why not? I mean, there was an election, I think, in 2006 or something after the Illinois Public Relations Law was changed to include home health assistance. And the SEIU did win a state-conducted election for representation rights. And at that point, the agency fee clause was kind of a given.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So is there anything else that you guys would like to speak about on either of those cases?
I can't think of anything.
Well, happy to take any other questions if you have.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, maybe during the roundtable discussion, we may interject some as well.
Okay. So for those of you just tuning in, we were talking with the representatives from the Atlanta office of Fisher and Phillips, and we are now going to go to the Atlanta Bar Association. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
We're glad to be here.
I will go ahead and start with Jackie Saylor. She is president of the Atlanta Bar Association. She has been on the executive committee for 9 of the 11 years on the board. She is a board member of the estate planning and probate section of the Atlanta Bar and is past chair of the sole practitioner small firm section and past officer of the women in profession section. She is a pro bono volunteer at the Fulton County and DeKalb County probate information centers, where she assists people with probate questions and filling out forms. She is a founding partner of the Saylor Law Firm, LLP, a boutique Atlanta and St. Simons Island, Georgia, firm of attorneys and attorney CPAs that represent entrepreneurs, executives, families, heirs on matters regarding their business, estate, tax, and financial plans. The Saylor Law Firm has been listed in the U.S. News Best Law Firms in America. The firm also received the Law Firm Service Award by the Atlanta Bar Association. She has written, edited, and published in a variety of legal and community publications. She wrote about the pitfalls of using online legal services to write your will in Atlanta Magazine and the West Georgia Health Foundation newsletter. She is co-author and co-editor of Women in the Law, a guide to women's legal rights in Georgia. Thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
And I will go to Terry Beck. She joined the Atlanta Bar Association in January 2013 and brings 15 years of nonprofit management experience with her. She is formerly executive director of Everybody Wins, Atlanta Children's Literacy and Mentoring Organization, a longtime community partner of the Atlanta Bar Association. The Atlanta Bar Association is the largest voluntary bar association in the Southeast, with over 6,400 members from 12 metropolitan Atlanta countries. It has earned a national reputation for successful and innovative programs that support its diverse membership and promote the fair administration of justice in the community. And last but not least, Wade Watson is the immediate past president of the 6,500-member Atlanta Bar Association, having served on its board of directors for over 11 years, a partner with Caldwell & Watson, LLP. Mr. Watson is a leader in the field of fiduciary law, the law that governs the rights and obligations of individuals involved in wills, trusts, guardianships, conservatorships, and closely held businesses. Mr. Watson represents people in fights over the transfer and control of family wealth, that is, the family feud. Mr. Watson has a passion for representing people who have been mistreated by those who are closest to them. He is a Georgia native, a Phi Beta Kappa graduate of Emory University, and an honor graduate of the University of Georgia School of Law. In his 32 years of practice, he has developed deep knowledge of the law in this field, the lawyers who practice it, and the judges and jurors who decide these cases. Wow. Again, some impressive members of the Atlanta Bar. We're glad you're here representing. I will start with Wade. What is the mission of the Atlanta Bar Association, and can you share a little history?
Well, the Atlanta Bar was formed in 1888. It's one of the oldest bar associations, voluntary bar associations in the country, and we recently celebrated our 125th anniversary with a big luncheon where we had the president-elect of the American Bar Association speak, William Hubbard, and had about 350 lawyers gathered to talk about our history. And it started in, with a Saturday afternoon meeting at down at the old Fulton County Courthouse, and the purpose of it, I think the first thing they did was agree on what the fees should be for everybody, and gotcha. They wanted to get rid of the rabble in the profession. It has grown in its mission since then, and essentially we promote justice in our community. We provide a platform for lawyers to collaborate with each other, to learn more about their areas of practice, and learn about the other people who are practicing. And we have a lot of charitable work that we do, from educating the public to one of the things that I love most that we do is called the Summer Law Internship Project, where we get high school kids from disadvantaged circumstances all over Atlanta, and we put them in law firms and judges' offices for 6 weeks and teach them. We pay them and teach them how to dress, how to introduce themselves, what it's like to be in a professional office. And we just finished our 22nd class.
Oh, wow.
And the people who are running it, some of them are graduates.
Oh, fantastic.
Of the class, we have several lawyers practicing and who are members of our association who started as summer law interns.
That's wonderful. That is such a great outreach. Is there any other programs or initiatives that the Atlanta Bar supports in the community? Jackie, can you answer that?
Yes, there are quite a number of them. One of them that Terry will talk about more later is the Lawyer Referral and Information Service. And that's probably one of our most wide-reaching programs. I think we got about 40,000 calls last year and served about 15,000 people who are looking for lawyers. And if they want help finding a good lawyer who in the field they are looking for, they should call 404-521-0777. 521-0777, area code 404. And the reason is...
You're good at that, Jackie.
She needs to take my seat.
I didn't want to leave that part out. And when they call, they'll have an intake person. They're not attorneys, but then they'll refer them to an attorney in the field. And if you... And it's not very expensive to go through this. And then if you... are really not able to pay what a lawyer normally charges, we have the Modest Means Panel. It's to help Georgia residents. And that's also, you can find out about that. If you really don't have as much money as you need, then the Legal Aid might be able to help you, or the Atlanta Volunteer Lawyers Foundation. And Wade just talked about our summer law internship program, and that is a very competitive process, and that starts in the spring. So if you have some aspiring students who might be interested in that, you would get in touch with the bar early in the spring. We also have the Minority and Diversity Clerkship, and it has law firms and judicial clerkships. We have students who go to that, first-year law students who go to that. And we also have the Atlanta Santa Project. It serves children and the elderly during the holiday season. And there are a lot of pro bono opportunities through the community. The Truancy Intervention Project, Atlanta Legal Aid Society, and the Georgia Asylum and Information Network. We help, we work with all of these groups. But the majority of our pro bono is done through our sections. Mm-hmm. And we have 22 sections. And these sections, most of them all have their own pro bono project. And the one of them that you mentioned that I work with for the estate planning and probate section is the Probate Information Center. And you go down there and you stay really from about 1 to 5. So you're there, and you have people coming in 30-minute segments. And they've been they go through they can call the Probate Information Center or the Fulton County Probate Court, and they can get you involved with that. And also the Women in Perfection section, which I have been active in, they have a low-income cancer patients. They help these low-income cancer patients with their legal needs.
Wow.
And they also work with children of incarcerated parents through Forever Families. And I've gone there, and you help them prepare dinner. It's usually pretty good. And then you help them with their homework. But
I did not realize the vast array of all the things that you are doing in the community. I think that's a wonderful. Let me ask Wade another question here. Does the Atlanta Bar collaborate with other bars or organizations in the community?
We absolutely do. The right after the disaster of 9/11 and the Seth Kirschenbaum, who was one of the leaders of the bar then, said that, you know, we have dozens and dozens of volunteer bars in the Atlanta area, mm-hmm. and we need to work together. And so he helped create the Multi-Bar Leadership Council. And this is a group of bar leaders, everything from we have the Atlanta Bar, we have the Gate City Bar Association, we have the Stonewall Bar Association, we have, there's 16 or 17 mm-hmm. of 17. Them now. We meet monthly, talk about what we're doing, share ideas, and the big thing we do is we have a cook-off in the spring where we met at Grant Park, and the competition was intense. each group had to submit a dish, and we had a panel of actual judges.
That was going to be my question. Amongst attorneys cooking, who's going to judge this? Whatever. Yes. Yeah, so.
We had real judges, Court of Appeals judges, Superior Court judges, I think they had the best time because they got to eat everything. And I will say that my wife and I submitted on behalf of the Atlanta Bar a dish called boiled custard, which is a traditional southern dish of British origin, which my mama pronounces Bob custard. And now it didn't win the prize. But we served 2 gallons of boiled custard to the crowd. So the judges voted for the other dishes, but they ate my custard or my wife's custard.
Just wondering if it was a quart of banana peels or orange peels.
but this is the way we make friends, the way mm-hmm. we make relationships,
and the way we make things happen.
We build a community mm-hmm. so we can work better together. We've got, you know, Atlanta's got a huge population spread over dozens of counties, and trying to get us to work together as a community takes some time and effort, and this is one of the things we do.
And you like to eat, too.
We do.
Yeah. How many counties, again, was involved? Are you all involved in? Or do you incorporate?
There are 12 that we officially call in the Atlanta Bar Association. Okay. But, you know, there are 45,000 lawyers in Georgia.
Jeez.
And 70% of them, according to the Georgia Supreme Court's recent study, practice in 5 central metro counties.
Wow.
So the legal action in Georgia is in Atlanta.
Right.
And everybody has to be a member of the State Bar of Georgia. You can't unless you have to do
can't
that
practice.
In order to practice.
Right.
Okay.
No one has to be a member of the Atlanta Bar, but they volunteer to be because mm-hmm. they want to be part of the legal community here in Atlanta.
Sure.
And you work with probably the Atlanta Volunteer Lawyers Foundation as well.
We do.
Yeah, I've had them on the show. We've had the Georgia Trial Lawyers Association.
Marty Ellen.
As well.
Yeah.
Yes. Dear Marty Ellen. Yeah.
He's a pretty good salesman, isn't he?
Yeah. Let me get back to the sections of the bar and ask Terry what other various sections that generate much of the association's activities.
Well, we offer 22 different sections for our members to connect with so that they can be with their colleagues both inside and outside of their areas of practice. So we have sections such as litigation, bankruptcy, and corporate counsel. But we also have specialty groups such as women in the profession and solo practitioner small firm. I think both Wade and Jackie have both been members of that section along with several others. One of our most robust and social groups, as you might well expect, is the Atlanta Council of Younger Lawyers. We call that ACYL. They provide both educational networking and mentoring opportunities for young lawyers to grow and develop as attorneys. They have great social events. And each section operates independently with their own board of directors. This is great so that people have the opportunity to develop leadership not only within their section, but then it provides them a platform to grow into leadership within the Atlanta Bar Association as a whole.
Sure, sure. And I'm sure it helps them establish their practice. We've had that conversation on the show before. Yeah.
Build that for book the of business. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Jackie, if you would tell me a little bit more about the upcoming events that she was talking about as far as for the Atlanta Young Lawyers or some of the other sections in the bar.
Yes. As you know, like most of America, the summer we slow down a little bit and catch our breath because May is the end of our year and we cram a lot in there. Mm-hmm. And we recently had the Women in Profession section give an award for the outstanding women in the law. And upcoming, we have a judge's meeting. Not really a meeting. It's a reception to honor judges. And the Gate City Bar is hosting this, but we are a co-sponsor. And so just by being a member of the Atlanta Bar, you're also entitled to go to that. And that is at King & Spalding. And in August, a lot of firms, it took a little time off. Some of them start again having their meetings. And the Estate Planning and Probate has an upcoming meeting. The solo practitioner small firm, they can never take time off. They still have two meetings a month. All year round.
Two meetings a month?
Yes. Wow. One, a breakfast at the Buckhead Club, and then a lunch down in Midtown. So they can't stop meeting.
Tell them about Celebrating Service, Jackie.
Yes. Celebrating Service is coming up in October, and that is when we have people get awards for what they've done service-wise. So you have service to the community, you have pro bono service, and you even have public service. And right now we're accepting nominations for all of those, and the Atlanta Bar website can tell you forms that you can fill out and nominate somebody for these positions. And it's always well attended by the whole public service sector and the members of our bar.
One thing you might want to do is go on to our website at atlantabar.org. We have a community calendar that lists ongoing socials, networking, CLE courses, so many activities of the bar. And it's constantly changing, so we invite you to visit the website often.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I was going to say, when I became vice president and then president, I knew a lot about the bar because I'd been in it a long time, but I was absolutely flabbergasted at the amount of activity that goes on. There is something happening every day.
Wow.
If you're a member, you have an opportunity to go meet and do something just about every day.
Sure.
And it's great. It's
So if you don't, it's your own fault.
That's right.
Yeah. So you don't have to just sit in your office staring at the pigeons at the high on the high rise.
Well, let's talk about membership a little bit. From what geographical areas do your members come from, Jackie? And can you share some demographic information?
Yes. So we say they're an Atlanta Bar Association, but you know the word Atlanta doesn't really mean Atlanta. It means very far out. And we for a long time have been 12 counties. And I'll name them in this metropolitan area: Cherokee, Clayton, Cobb, DeKalb, Douglas, Fayette, Forsyth, Fulton, Gwinnett, Henry, Paulding, and Rockdale. So if you are a lawyer and want to join a group like the Atlanta Bar, in addition to your local group, which we support, please join us if you're one of these 12 counties, if you either live or work there. But you can also be an associate member if you're not one of these type of lawyer, you know, you don't practice there. And you can be an associate member for a lesser price, but you don't get to vote and some other benefits of being a member.
Sure.
And about half of our members are between the ages of 25 and 44. And then they're, the other half are usually older, unless we had a super bright person who joined the bar before 25. And it still surprises me that men make up about 67% of our membership, and women about a third, or 33%.
Mm-hmm.
The women, they're so active, I thought they were probably half. But, you know, I went back and looked at the figures, and they really are just 33%. And it includes firm and corporate lawyers, solo practitioners, judges, government and public service lawyers, and law school students. And these law school students can do a lot. They help write for a magazine for the estate planning section, and they get their picture and their name and bio. So, you know, it's a good credential for them.
Tell me, Terry, how does a lawyer or budding lawyer join, and how much does it cost?
Well, it's easy to join because all you have to do is visit our website at atlantabar.org and click the Join Now button. We classify membership dues by the number of years that lawyers have been in practice. So the lowest paying membership we have starts at about $125. We do offer discounts to government, public service, and Georgia Law School faculty. The great news is that law students can join for free. This is our way of introducing our association to what we know will be aspiring leaders in the community. We want them to get to know us so they can join us and join up to four sections, actually, and understand better the bar operations. We have and offer some wonderful continuing legal education courses. In fact, some of them have been nationally recognized. So with your bar membership dues, you get $75 off of CLE courses. So we make those convenient for bar members. Often sections work in collaboration to sponsor some really interesting topics. So if you're a member of a section and you get those additional CLE discounts, at some levels the membership almost pays for itself.
Right, right. That's amazing. That's great. And then just the fact that it's such an active association in the community, I know that it supports many organizations through the charitable arm. Can you describe some of the endeavors of the foundation, who receives the benefits, just a little bit further?
Sure. The foundation supports really a wide array of organizations, community service groups. We have, as we spoke about recently, the Summer Law Internship Program and other activities like the Truancy Intervention Project, Atlanta Legal Aid Society, the Atlanta Volunteer Lawyers Foundation, and Georgia Lawyers for the Arts. We'd have a grant disbursement program so people can apply for grants, and we vote on them every year. We obviously support first and foremost the programs of the Atlanta Bar. The fun part of the foundation is we have three great fundraisers. In fact, one just happened. It's called Law Jam Battle of the Bands, and it was at Variety Playhouse. It's where bands that are comprised of at least some lawyers get up and sing their hearts out, and people come, vote for their bands, raise money for the foundation, and it's a great time. We also have a great array of musical and acting talent in our lawyers around the city. So we have a courthouse line theater production, and it takes place about a year every 15 months. We're going to have another production in May. We just had
Fantastic.
One last fall, and it was called Back in the Black, and sold out audiences three nights.
The only place you can see a Georgia Court of Appeals judge wearing a short trench coat and fishnet hose with her leg up on a table is at the one of our shows. So that's not something to be missed, and it will leave a lasting impression on you.
If that's not a drawing card, I don't know what is.
Yeah. I'm glad he said her.
Her leg.
Well, we've done the other. We've had it. Yeah.
Trying to be fair, or whatever. Across the board.
There's
a sight to be seen. I'm looking at some of the pictures on the website or whatever. Yeah. Now, and there's events coming up. You have a run, marathon, and there's all kinds of activities here. Yeah, the legal 14th legal runaround.
Yeah, the legal runaround is going to happen September 13th at John Howell Park in Virginia Highlands. It's a great time. Bring the children, bring the dogs. Come out, run, and or walk. The proceeds from this event will provide scholarships for children of police officers that have been killed or disabled in the line of duty.
Fantastic. Well, I feel like we've only just talked a little bit about all the subjects here that we talked about today, and so I definitely would love to have you guys back on the show. And Fisher and Phillips, I didn't ask Jim and Lori, tell the audience how they can get in touch with you as far as...
Probably the best way is the website, laborlawyers.com.
Okay, and I noticed you have a Facebook page and a Twitter handle and all that good stuff, too.
LinkedIn,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Is there any other comments or questions on anything else that we wanted to discuss today?
I think you were talking about it earlier, but I'd just be kind of curious amongst the panel, especially the association, for new attorneys, you mentioned they can join if they're in law school, currently in law school, right?
Correct.
Right.
From one of our 5 law schools around the state of Georgia. So all they have to do is, again, go to the website, atlantabar.org, and click join now, and we'll process them and get them started.
Yeah, because we've had a number of the up-and-coming lawyers or graduates and so forth. So you guys have seasoned pros, I guess. What are some of the things, either pitfalls or challenges or advice you would give them? What would be on the short list of as they open their practice? Wade's raising his hand. Yeah, we're not on video, by the way, Ray. Go ahead.
Well, people, particularly young lawyers, wonder why they should join a bar association. The millennials in particular want to know what's in it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And because, they're starting their practice, they're trying to learn their craft, they have exceedingly hard demands on them in terms of hours and commitment. And the answer I give is that the main reason you should join the Atlanta Bar Association is for the friends you're going to make. Mm. And everybody has friends, but the friends in the Atlanta Bar are the leaders in the profession. And we have a place, while we're a big group, we have lots of little groups and lots of meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you're going to see those people when you go to court. You're going to see members at the depositions. You're going to see them on the bench. You're going to see them across the table from you. If you're trying to close a deal, they're going to be on the phone with you. Just every part of your life. And if you're as fortunate as I've been, these people are going to show up at your wedding and your children's weddings. They're going to say nice things about you to your spouse and children, which is really great. And they'll help you celebrate your victories, your achievements, and help console you. Of course, I've never lost a case, but I've heard I have heard of lawyers who have, and that can be hard. And you need your friends. And so there's no better place to get your life and your career started than making friends in the Atlanta Bar Association.
And like you said, they're going to be around every corner, so you want to be on their good side.
Yeah, I guess I would ask Jim and Lori, Emily, she does a show once a month for service providers and people for the industry and the profession or whatever. So, and again, kind of catering, I think, to the new attorneys coming on the scene. So what are some things that you feel like is important for them to adopt early on in their career as far as, services, office, website, social media? I mean, what counsel would you give on that regard?
For vendors?
Not say vendors, but just suppliers or what's on their short list of things they need to establish themselves you know, beyond associations, starting their business, yeah.
Well, I think as a concept, I think the first thing anybody who's getting out of law school should think about is what area they want to practice in.
Okay.
Right.
And even in a defined specialty, there are subspecialties that you end up gravitating toward. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, for example, I've always been a labor and employment lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
They're different, but they're hooked together like hematology and oncology and the practice of medicine. I mean, they have the same kind of subject matter.
Well, and as the laws have just become increasingly more complex, even in the employee benefits area where I started over 20 years ago, you know, you did everything, but it's just especially getting so complex that you almost do tend to specialize.
There's so many niches now, right?
Correct. I mean, yeah.
You got to be really good at one thing instead of know just a little bit about everything.
We still, you know about everything.
Sure.
But
sure.
We all, of course.
You have to, yeah.
Yes, but you do tend to gravitate towards a specialty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It kind of comes natural.
Within. Correct.
Yeah.
And you're talking about people who are just coming out of school earlier. If you join the Atlanta Bar Association, one area, if you're not in a large firm or even or a medium firm and you're with a smaller firm or you're out on your own trying to establish a business, the small firm solo practitioners section is the place to go. It's very friendly. As I said, they meet twice a month. They go around the room. Everybody gets to say their name and where they practice and their area of practice, and that's the place that both Wade and I started out at, and we both became chairs of that section. And people can help you, they mentor you, and when you pass the bar finally, you know, they clap for you. They're very helpful.
And we talk about the business of practicing law. You know, what vendors to use, how to set up your office, what are the best practices for running a law office. You know, in the big firms, you don't have to think about that.
Right.
But
I've heard there's a growth of students that are actually just starting out right away on not going into a large firm, but just starting their own practice right off the bat.
Well, in Atlanta, we're still suffering the effects of the real estate recession because real estate has always been a backbone of Atlanta legal practice. And so there have been fewer big firm jobs, and people have to. But it's changing.
Yes.
The future is bright. You have to wear shades.
Or join the association,
That's where you start.
Both. Sometimes you need the shades at the meetings, That's a great offering for these solo practitioners, because you probably feel, you know, you're just out there on your own. And so they can gather a couple of times or on a regular basis and have that camaraderie and exchange ideas or whatever,
Yeah, that two times a month didn't include the socials that they have.
Everyday socials.
Yeah.
But then even some attorneys or law students do graduate and go into a large firm and then find what their niche is and find what they really enjoy doing. And then as they get better at that, they could even consider doing their own practice.
Well, that's right, and a lot of people do. And, you know, if you start in one niche or one specialty and you said, you know, I really don't like this, and you want to make a change, it's real important to have some friends in the Atlanta Bar Association that you might call and say, hey, what are you doing and how do you like it? That's the way people find their jobs is from their friends.
Sure,
and so it's never too late to start.
Well, we're glad that everybody was here once again, and we will definitely have you back to dive a little bit deeper on all the things that we talked about, because I feel like we just kind of brushed the surface.
Yeah.
An hour just goes by so quickly. So
I agree.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. And this show has been sponsored by DaVinci Virtual Offices and DaVinci Meeting Rooms. If you are interested in part-time offices, meeting rooms, or need a professional business address for your business or for a second location in Atlanta, you can find their links on our Atlanta Legal Experts website. That's atlantalegalexperts.com. www.atlantalegalexperts.com. Click the DaVinci logo for AL listener specials and promotions. And don't forget to mention AL Radio.
Sounds good to me.
This is Emily Rowell with attorneyofficespace.com signing out.